swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads where bandits are. Catacombs and giant doors protect the chest that stores some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's ore. A grand theft of Elder Scrolls, Simon's Quest with Toe and Earl, rocket shoes to Everclue, Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash your crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, y'all.
Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. That dash is a hyphen. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues. Download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. We're also on Spotify, so if that's your means of consuming podcasts, then we ask that you put a little Control Issues on that plate, balance that diet out. You can go to X, My Control Issues is the handle, and also pop on over to twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. AMC, how you living?
Living well, A-Dub. Yeah, this week has been awesome. Can gotta say weather's been pretty good. Got a light drizzle in LA on a Saturday, which is kind of nice.
That light drizzle.
Yeah. So you got a little bit of that. And yeah, my week's been awesome. Got in some workouts, watching some TV, catching up on stuff. I haven't watched X-Men 97. Everybody's saying it's great. I wanted to let it build up, but I don't think I'm going to make it. So I think I'm going to watch these episodes.
Yeah, the homies are starting to talk about it, so I think I gotta dive in at some point. I heard it's already renewed for like a season 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be awesome. So yeah, I can't wait.
One of the best intros ever.
Greatest shows ever. It's like a little kid just watching like an animated soap opera. Like, it's just awesome.
It might be one of the first, like, what is that, serialized like American cartoons, whereas, you know, most cartoons is just each episode is a standalone independent of everything that happened in other episodes, whereas with X-Men it was anime level where there was literally an actual story every episode progression.
Previously on X-Men.
Yes.
Like, you had to know what was going on to understand what was going on in this episode.
Wait a minute, Jean Grey did what?
Wolverine's trying to get with who?
That love triangle got introduced to thruples and entanglements.
Yeah, I love it. Like, people who didn't know about like the Wolverine memes of him like stroking the picture of him and Jean. like Cyclops and her in the background. Like, now they understand all that shit. But yeah, it's awesome. Last night I had an awesome experience. I wanted some Japanese barbecue, you know, like the ones where you like cook it yourselves, Korean style, Japanese style. Mm-hmm. I think it's like Gaikaku. But I was in the mood for that. Was looking up a place in our area since we hadn't tried it over here. Ended up on a spot, just like a random spot. Just checked to see if they had reservations. They had it at 8 p.m., which is not always easy in LA. An hour out before you're going to eat. Found that place, go to it, get there, sit down. There's like barely anybody in there, which is like already kind of like, this is interesting. But that's okay. Go in there and we get these menus. We're looking at it and they're like, oh yeah, like, we're not using those menus tonight. We're like, okay. What? And they just show me and they're like, you have two options, the first or the second one. And basically one was $60 and one was $90 per person. And it was basically chef's choice, which is kind of cool. So I was like, all right. I was like, I was not expecting this, but yeah, let's just ride with it. And so like I asked her, I was like, so like, do we know? Because at first, like it just said one appetizer, like five meats, yada, yada, yada. And so we start looking at the menu again and they didn't really explain like what was going on. So like, that's why we were like, oh, okay. So we just go along with it. And I was like, do we know what they're serving? And then she like rattled off a couple things and I didn't know what she said, any of the cuts. So I was like, all right, cool, whatever. Like Marissa was very open, which is great. So yeah, we get the food. They explain what each thing is, which I still don't really know to this point. Like there was one plate that had like different types of tongue, but they were all good though. And I've had tongue before. Tongue is great. But yeah, a bunch of tongue on one plate, then some other meats, and then a short rib on another plate. And yeah, fired that shit up, and it was so bomb. Everything was perfectly seasoned, the ones that were at least seasoned. And then, yeah, it was just so good. So great experience. I never had that where, you know, where everything is just blind, like what you're being served. Like I've heard of that with like sushi places where you pay money and then they just serve you up like what the cut of the day is, and you go for that ride. But yeah, it's the first time I did it with meats, and it was very bomb, I gotta say. So that was a cool experience. And yeah, my week has been good outside of that. I took the kids to the park this morning. A-Dub, how has your week been?
Pretty solid, man. Just doing that work grind. Had to hit the reset button on the hairdo. I know we don't do the video, but used to have, you know, some long hair, doing the whole sponge brush thing, get the curls going. But, you know, I felt some low spots in it. You know, your boy, we getting up there in age, so you gotta start thinking about what to do about things like that. So cut it all off, went back to the fade, saw that there's no issues, so I got peace of mind and a big sigh of relief, because I was getting a little stressed out about that. But now that I know what's up, you know, get one more close cut, let it all come back in, just take better care of it. You know, I guess I was just having a lot of dry, brittle breakage, but you know, just I can hang in there a little longer. It's preserving that youth. So that's good for me. And yeah, insofar as things I've been watching, you know, the season finale of the second season of Halo was doing big things. I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody.
Oh, you've been watching Halo? I didn't know you were. You didn't tell me about. Did you just start watching it, or had you watched it in the past?
No, I watched season one in the past. It was season one was done when I started watching it, so I was able to just go right through it. But I love Pablo Schreiber, man. He's my dude. And Bo Keem Woodbine, that was just a pleasant surprise to have him in that show. And yeah, man, great cast. It's just, and it's Halo. Like, what do you expect? When they get to the action, things just pop off. So much drama. You know, I'm in the camp where I'm not with him having his helmet off so often, but they're giving me that Halo action.
Mandalorian that shit.
Exactly. But I mean, it's done. And Pablo's been saying stuff about it like, you're going to see my face. I'm like, all right, dude, you got a good face. So it's good. Season finale of Halo season two, like we're where we need to be now. So season three is gonna be tremendous. Solo Leveling got a new episode of that, and we're really starting to get into the overall thrust of what that show is about. So again, no spoilers, but I gotta say, some of the best anime action, and just one of the better animes I've seen, where they take on the idea of video game stuff, like RPGs and fantasy stuff and classes and things becoming real life aspects for the people in the show. So I highly recommend Solo Leveling to anybody who can watch that. Delicious in Dungeon is just continuing to be one of the most solid shows I've watched. And just what they're doing with how they're grounding the whole fantasy dungeon experience into, like, there's an economy, there's an ecosystem, there's just things work a certain way, and it presents a whole lot of nuance and just, man, you gotta watch it. I highly recommend Delicious in Dungeon. It's on Netflix. I also watched a new show that I saw pop up on Netflix in my suggestions, Dragon Quest: The Adventures of Dai. 50 episodes. I'm in like the last 5 episodes. It's Dragon Quest, but it's a cartoon. And I love that so much. You know, with the passing of Akira Toriyama, that really pushed me to watch it, because that, you know, Dragon Quest was one of those other products where his art style popped up. I think that was like one of the first games that had his art style, and I always remembered that. But yeah, The Adventures of Dai is really doing things. It's very endearing. You know, it's it's optimistic, but it still gets dark. And it, man, anime is just killing it. Let me see. I haven't really watched any movies. Abbott Elementary is always tight. Like, season three is phenomenal. Just the writing is airtight, but also the planning of scenes and just the little tiny nuances that make a given situation funny, like where people on the couch are sitting there thinking like, oh, are they gonna do that? Oh, he's doing it. Ah, that didn't work out. Like one of the characters was on a PTA panel answering questions, and he like got up and he was like, you know, doing his thing, being cool. And there's this little space between the tables that he was trying to like get through in order to go in the front and speak to people, but he didn't make it. So he went back. It's little things like that just make me chuckle, because I always pay attention to that stuff. And, you know, there's a bunch of other awesome documentaries and films that are out now that I need to catch up on. Other than that, just chilling insofar as like the personal life and everything. Coincidentally, I also went out for a Korean barbecue last night with the homies Evan, Grimes, Naive, and Nevin, who I haven't seen in a good while. So it was nice to hook up with the homies. And like I said, Korean barbecue, they bring it out. Everything is good. They put it on. It's just cooked properly. The best potato salad I've ever had, like, to the extent that I think that there's just an old black lady in the back and her only job is to make fire potato salad. So yeah, that was great. We went downtown. It was nice, you know, being out at a venue that I normally don't go to, and just, you know, it's packed, it's just gorgeous women everywhere, just helping your boy reignite that passion for being social. So I got to work on myself, get myself tight again so I can get back in there and really, really make some things happen for my self-improvement and the rest of my life. But, you know, other than that, just been getting my gaming in, and you know how that goes.
Speak on that, A-Dub, what you been gaming on?
What have I been gaming on? I've mainly been in my live service rotation, a lot of Overwatch 2 with East Single, with yourself. Even had almost got the stars to align yesterday when I got an invite from not from our friend TJ, but from his son on his account to join. And he was on there with DJ Trues. And I was like, oh my God, am I about to get matches of Overwatch with my homie's son and my other old homie that I haven't seen in years? Like, I was texting Trues like, I'm about to go nuts if we can get this. And for some reason, Trues wasn't able to stay connected, and then TJ's son bounced out, and it was just me staring at a title screen. So then I went back to Diablo 4, playing on my Barbarian Season 3, Season of the Construct. I just been playing the living daylights out of that game. This past week, I went from like level 80, I'm at level 95. Now, so I'm very close to finally maxing out my Barbarian. I'm also at the point where I'm starting to take on the higher level challenges, like the uber bosses and the things that you have to get the crafting materials in order to summon. So I'm working on that. I'm hunting for uniques. I have quite an assortment that's already equipped on my Barbarian, but I'm chasing them. I'm looking for those Ubers. Like, once I got the Hell Tides and the Nightmare Dungeons up to level 85, I was like, all right, it's volume now. Let's just get everything. Let's get everything in front of me and take it down as soon as possible to see what kind of drops I can coax out of this system. Just a lot more legendary drops, a lot more unique drops. Still haven't gotten my first Uber yet, but who knows? Maybe things will change in the future. In the topic of the week, we'll talk about a little later. What else? Overwatch, Diablo, of course, Helldivers, you know, getting in with East Single. Like, him and his boy Matt, they've gotten to a point where the two of them are taking on, like, the game has 9 difficulties. At, you know, in the early days when they were getting to know the game, it would take all three of us to take out like a level 4 or a level 5 difficulty mission. Now the two of them are just taking out level 7 difficulty missions. It was to the point where most of the time I was just watching them absolutely ransack these missions, and I'm just like, I'm not even doing anything right now. Y'all are just handling business. This is amazing. You know, Helldivers still a little problematic, still having some issues with connecting with people and joining their games in order to play with them. So hopefully Arrowhead Studios gets that sorted out sooner rather than later. They may mention that one of the latest patches created some issues. So, you know, they're hard at work at it. I trust the developer. The game is still one of the most fantastic things out there. You know, we got mechs now. They put out the new War Bond that has a whole new slate of weapons and armor. And, you know, just playing around with all that stuff is incredibly fulfilling. It makes things feel fresh and new. I haven't seen the flying enemies, which have been formally acknowledged now within the game. So it'll be interesting to get into these more nuanced situations, and I continue to look forward to everything that's going to be coming to this game, including a new enemy type at some point. We know it's coming, we just don't know what it is. And yeah, just new weapons, new stratagems, new armor, new hazards. Like, you haven't lived until you're running away from hordes of bugs on your way to an extraction point while meteors are coming down and impacting the landscape all over you, because, you know, it was extremely tough. Arrowhead decided that they were going to scale back a little bit on the severity of the natural hazards. So, you know, work in progress, but quite a wondrous work they have weaved. That's about it for me. What about you, AMC?
Yeah, a little bit of got less Midnight Suns in this week, more Lava Live in this week. That Lava Live. Yeah. played through the Distant Future story. Fucking great story. Just you're playing as this like server robot. It actually has like the only combat in that story is at the very end of the story. Like, everything else is you like kind of navigating the ship and playing through the story and, like, you know, figuring out where to go and things like that, to do certain things within the ship. So yeah, it's like not a combat oriented story, which you got from most of the other stories in that game. But it still was very heartfelt, great, like just great character development. Just a complete disaster. It's like you're on a spaceship and you're traveling back to Earth and you have precious cargo, and all I say is like everything, it just turns out to be a complete disaster, the whole situation. But in that, you, like, you know, you learn a little bit about humanity, about AI, about robots, and, you know, our connection to them, and, you know, the flaws not necessarily being in the robots, but being in the makers of the robots. So yeah, it was a great storyline. I'm now at the point where I have two more characters left, and then I'm assuming I'll have the game beat unless there's additional content after that. And so yeah, it's a phenomenal game. As I'm playing it, every time I'm playing it, I'm like, how is this a remake? Like, this, like, how did this exist in the past? Just because the storytelling is just so good, and it's just a unique way to play a game. Like, it's seven stories within one game, or I think it's seven, maybe six. Six stories in one game, so six mini stories, and yet they're all, like, absolutely amazing, well-told, feel fully developed, and yeah, like, I wouldn't want it any other way. It's a great way to look at it when you think of, like, you know, games where you want to tell a story, but it's not something that necessarily is going to take, you know, 30 to 40 hours to complete. I like this idea of, like, let's just tell a bunch of stories in one game and yet make each story feel like its own unique game. I love it. Hats off to those developers and what they were able to create. Other game I created, played was Overwatch 2. I won't say much there. I played some solo, played with you on Saturday. And yeah, the big thing was, so the other weeks I'd been working on surviving as Mercy when they throw out the Sombra. This week I just said, screw it. They throw out the Sombra, I'm getting that change as quick as possible, and let's see what happens. Rather than just, you know, fighting the waves, just go with it and see what happens, or go under them. So I just immediately switched to Lucio right when the Sombra would start targeting me. That would shut down the Sombra. Same thing with Tracer. Right when they started targeting me with Tracer, switched to Lucio, and it completely just screws up their dynamic, because they now no longer have this like they have a character who's trying to penetrate into the back, but they're not able to really do anything because they're not picking off any support characters at that point. So then it forces them to switch, and ideally they're switching to a lesser character, because the way it played out every time is when they were forced to switch from Sombra or Tracer, the team took a dip. Their team took a dip. So it was clearly there was something in that playstyle that really worked for them. And when you took that away, it was like, what are you going to do now? And they didn't have much to answer to that. And the thing with me is Lucio is my most played character. It's just that I feel like Mercy is obviously a better healer. And so when I switch to Lucio, I'm actually playing with a better character at that point and just, you know, getting off more offense and things like that. And so for me, it's a complete smooth transition, whereas I guess for other people it may not be that way, and that's why I like it. So that is definitely one of those things that I'm going to play around a little bit more, because if I could figure out even the timing on that, because there are some matches where we'd be down 0-2 in Flashpoint, make those changes, and then we just come back 3-0 like it was nothing.
There is no better feeling than that.
Yeah, especially when you just know they're on the other end of it, just like feeling that, like just that momentum just completely shift and then just be completely uncontrollable.
Why isn't anything working?
Yeah.
Well, we talked about it. Like, my feeling with that is the way that we play Overwatch is very different from other people. Like, we come in with characters that we're working on, and we have such a good basic understanding of the game itself that we can make those work and progressively improve as we're using them. But then when people want to start playing quote unquote Counterwatch and trying to take us out, it's like, okay, you're going to make me switch to the counter that is a character that I'm significantly better with. Like, okay, it's your funeral play.
You want my final form? You got my final form.
and that's how I look at it too. Is it's like, whenever I'm playing, it's like I step through my forms. I start at the lowest level. It's like, oh, you guys are tough. All right, let me get a little more firepower. Oh, you still tough? Let me get my maximum firepower. Oh, you want to play this little funny style game? Let me pull out the character that you don't know I play with that I'm bringing out. But like, when other people are switching, I don't think they're not necessarily switching to the characters, to the counter characters that they're good with. They're just switching to the characters that are, you know, meta. This is what counters that character, so they think like, oh, I have this, it should work. It's like, no, homie, I played against that. Like, you can't just come in here thinking you're gonna get me on a simple character swap. So yeah, but back to you, sorry to interrupt.
No, that's exactly what I was gonna say. But yeah, that's those are the games I've been playing. Loving video games. A-Dub, let's get into the first topic of the week.
Topic of the week.
You know, lead off, well,
there's a lot of news. It's a lot of, like, you know, hemming and hawing type news where it's people saying stuff, or it's like, you know, Dragon's Dogma 2 released, and, you know, we're not really a Dragon's Dogma family here at Control Issues, so that doesn't factor into our lives, because, you know, we're not like these other podcasts where the guys are, you know, they're playing all the games and they're able to provide input and comment about all that stuff. We stick mainly to the games that we enjoy and that appeal to us. So that gives you a little different flavor, a little different perspective. So in that spirit, we're going to talk about the news that affects us most. First and foremost, we got some updates on Overwatch 2.
Yes.
Yes, we do. The team, the new Jeff Kaplan came in talking about the changes that they're going to be making for season 10. And this might delight some players who feel like Overwatch is a little stingy with its content. You know, too much stuff is timed. They don't feel like Blizzard is paying attention to what the people want. But yeah, like, one of the changes that they're going to be doing is that now mythic skins from past seasons are going to be made available in the shop. So if you're someone who just simply didn't have the time to reach max level on a battle pass, or, you know, maybe you just had no interest in it anyway and you didn't get that stuff, it's going to be made available to you, so you can get a hold of that stuff. You can customize yourself and see what all the fun is about. Another important change that they're making is that new characters will no longer be made available by progressing through the battle pass. Instead, new characters for season 10 and going forward will be made available immediately when the season starts to everyone, so you can get in there and try out the new character and figure out how to counter them, and then I could figure out how to counter you. So that's how we're doing that. They also made mention of a new game mode that they're going to be introducing called Clash. Other things are happening as well. They're going to be giving us a new map in Peru, which is Alari's region. So we're gonna have that to play around with. But they mentioned that they're gonna start getting away from just giving us new maps and instead looking at the existing maps for things that they can rework and make better. Like we already have the Junkertown rework that came with season 9, where they added a lot more stuff in the open area so that there's more cover. It allows you to have strategy, more avenues of escape, and just makes the clashes and the game itself a bit more contentious, rather than it being, in certain cases, a steamroll if you just don't have the right character or you haven't quite figured out what the opposing team strategy is. They're going to keep doing these reworks. They mentioned specifically the Coliseo map is going to be reworked. Coliseo is the one where you're escorting the robot, which is by far my favorite game type that's been added to the game. So I'm very interested to see what they're going to do to change up the layout of that area and how that's going to affect, the flow of combat in there. They also made an interesting note for people who think Overwatch is a dead game and nobody's playing it. They're approaching 100 million players. that doesn't sound dead to me, but everyone's entitled to their opinions, even if they're wrong. And lastly, on my notes here, they also made mention that they're looking at other systems to help with the overall quality and experience that players are having with the game. The one that stood out mostly to me is that they're looking at how they're going to respond to disruptive player behavior. So currently with the game, I hate to say it, but I don't really feel compelled to play the game by myself. I have the most fun when I'm playing with AMC, when I'm playing with E-Single. Hopefully I can get TJ Sun in there. Hopefully we get some Cam T and get this going on, trying to get Grimes to participate. But there are a lot of people who are leaving games. There are still people who get in the games and they'll move around and stuff just to not get automatically kicked, but they won't do anything. You're looking at the scoreboard and it's like, why have you gone down 6 times and you've taken no one down? Like, why are you a DPS character and you haven't broken 1,000 damage and the match is almost over? Like, what is going on? And we can only do our part by submitting reports and providing feedback, but hopefully we'll see a bit more meaningful action taken toward the players who just can't be bothered to play the game seriously. So AMC, with the Overwatch update, it was very brief and very to the point. Did anything stand out to you, and how do you feel about the changes that they're going to be making going forward?
Yeah, I think they're great. It's good for people who are just jumping into the game or people who have been playing the game and just... Because I'm the type of person, I haven't bought every battle pass, so I've definitely missed out on some mythic skins. So the idea that I can go back and work towards getting mythic skins, and two, they said there's like a progression system with that, so you don't have to. So whereas if you got in the battle pass, you had all the options for the different color variations if you wanted to mix and match and play around with how it looked. Now you can work through it through a progression system where you're unlocking the different colors, so you can kind of decide like, all right, I got the colors I like on this mythic skin as I earn the points for that. So you know what? Now I'm going to start divvying the points that I'm earning towards this other mythic skin to unlock these colors and whatnot. So I like that idea. It's you can do it, and it's in a fair way. So you're not just completely just unlocking it. You're working through it in a progression system. So it also gives like some incentive for people who have just been playing the game, but not necessarily putting money into it, to still get some rewards from that side. Because the mythic skins are fucking shit. On top of
they're awesome, dude. And just the fact that they're customizable so that even if somebody comes in with your character on the opposing team, it's there's no guarantee that they're going to look exactly the same as you. So that's a cool touch, and I feel like they should put more into that area. Maybe even start making some existing skins into mythic skins that have greater amounts of customization. Continue.
Yeah. They also, but the idea that now the heroes are just available, that's mm-hmm. great. And they still have that onboarding period for people who are just starting the game. So it's not like somebody can jump on and they'll just have the heroes readily available. So there's still, that's good because, you know, how like the community is kind of like there. We don't mind playing with new people, but we'd like it if they had some more time to, you know, get used to the game, learn the abilities and whatnot before they're just jumping right into quick play. And so I like that that's still there for the newbies. But for the people who have been playing the game and just didn't have everybody, now they got everybody. So that's great. You don't have to pay for the battle pass to get the characters, they said. So even the new characters. So that's like one thing. Because I know I would just, there's some seasons I might just take off of playing it, especially if like you guys are focusing on other games. I might just hop in a little less, which means I'm probably not going to buy the battle pass. And so with that, I now know that I don't have to worry about, you know, getting to level whatever 50 to unlock the new character. I just know that that character is going to be there. So that will be absolutely awesome too, because that's just something that I never had FOMO, but people who might have been experiencing FOMO, that will alleviate some of that tension between them and the game. So it seems like they're doing a lot of things to, you know, one, as I just said, alleviate the FOMO, but two, to really, you know, embrace and bring people in. And so I think that that's one of those things that's gonna pay off, because the idea that there is a progression system with the mythic skin, it just gives people more reasons to play the game, as opposed to, you know, just hopping in there, looking at the price of the skins and complaining. There's now at least a pathway to some of the more important ones. So I think they're showing signs that as the game progresses through the years, they'll just, you know, slowly roll out more and more of the older content and make it more available. I know they said that you can earn more currency too. Yeah, you'll be able to earn more currency. So that's another good thing. So they're really playing around with like the rewards from, you know, playing the game, and then how you can use those rewards. So I think these are all things that are addressing, you know, some of the gripes from, you know, those nickel and diamond crowds. So I think these will be all good updates. I like the idea that they're adding in the new maps, the new mode. I can't wait to see what that is. Cause I've been, even with Flashpoint, when they introduced that, like, it was like, all right, let's see what this is all about. I love Flashpoint. Same thing with,
Flashpoint's cool. I used to hate it.
Whatever the robot one, like where you're just pushing it. I love that one.
That's fine.
So they've been pretty solid with their modes that they add. And so I'm looking forward to this. And with that, they said that we'll be getting new maps. So that's always a good thing, because they're definitely taking some maps away, which is probably a good thing. I'm sure that they saw that one, they either just didn't work, or two, like once they switched it to the 5-on-5 format, some maps just became obsolete. So it's good that they're still adding more and more new maps to the game, just to, you know, give it a fresh feel and something new to learn with, like, you know, just different choke points and areas to hide and shit like that. So I love it. I love that they have this, like, they've laid out what they're doing now and what they plan to do, what's coming. So clearly there's a lot of support still for Overwatch, as much as like people would like you to believe that, you know, this game is not what it used to be ever since they decided not to give us our story content.
They ruined it.
But that's all I have to say for that. But absolutely awesome. I'm loving it, and I can't wait for all these changes to come.
Season 10. But I mean, as much as we love the game and as optimistic as we are about it, there are some folks who are a little less sprightly when it comes to Overwatch, especially when it comes to Blizzard. We got troll of the week, 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 week. Yes, of course. There's never a shortage of people who want to come sideways at Overwatch, and we brought you a handful of them today. First troll says, "I'm glad I made the right decision from the beginning not to engage with Overwatch 2. These half measures and virtue signaling aren't helping." Half measures and virtue signaling. Like, in that 5-minute presentation of what they're going to be doing for season 10. Like, I didn't see any kind of half measures or virtue signaling. I see incremental steps toward an even better experience than what we enjoy today. And I also see concerns from the community being addressed in meaningful manners that will be detailed at a later date. Next troll says, what a slap in the face to those that put in the grind to complete every season. Just throw their hard-earned reward in a store for everybody. Yeah, but if it's in the store, don't you have to pay for it? So it's not like you're just, it's not like they're just giving you the skins for free. Like, people still gotta, if you don't have time, then you got money. So I don't see this as a slap in the face. I find it hard to view anything as a slap in the face where it's making something that previously was unavailable to people who, again, probably didn't have the time, probably playing other games, that they still have access to those higher rewards in a different way than we got it. We got it for free, dude. We played the game. And like, my question about that is like, didn't you enjoy playing the game to earn those skins? Or was the whole purpose of you playing the game just to get the skin?
Yeah.
Let's just be real with what our goals and ambitions are. Next show says, they lied about story mode. They sell you Cowboy Bebop skins that cost as much as the whole series on Blu-ray. Each worst sequel of all time. Oh, you mean that free sequel that you didn't have to pay for with all those characters that you didn't have to pay for with all those skins that you could have earned free, and you're getting mad because they do a crossover with another company that is outside of Blizzard. So that wasn't free. It's not like Cowboy Bebop was like, yeah, just go ahead and make that. Like, they paid for that. So how else are they supposed to get the money back? I can see complaints with perhaps the cost, but at the same token, it depends on what appeals to you. Cowboy Bebop appeals to me significantly, way more than One Punch Man, way more than Le Sserafim and all those other crossovers that they've done so much. So it was nothing for me to, one, purchase the bundle, which has four of the five skins in it for one discounted price, and to continue playing the game gleefully, knowing that once I complete the necessary challenges, I get that fifth skin for free. So, you know, what do people expect? At some point, you're going to have to pay for something. You're not going to get everything for free. You got a whole game, a whole sequel, first of all time. Get out of here. Last troll says, makes me sad when I think how far Overwatch fell. I still hope it keeps getting updates and making it a better game for those who still play. Yeah, all 100 million of us still playing the game. How far it has fallen, I mean, it depends on what your definition of up is, because if Overwatch has fallen, then more games need to jump off the cliff, because they just seem to be on a continual upward trajectory from my perspective. AMC, do you have anything for these trolls?
Nah, they bugging A-Dub. They don't know what they're talking about. Overwatch, whenever I hear people talk, like, I literally have gotten to the point where I'll, like, if I listen to a show and they start talking about Overwatch and I know their perspective on Overwatch is negative, I'll just skip it, because in my head, they're lying, because the game is awesome. So, yeah, whenever people
or, like, just sensationalize it for clicks.
Yeah, whenever I hear people complain about Overwatch, I think they're liars. I think they haven't touched the game in years, and I think they can go to hell. So yeah, the game's too good.
These changes don't sound good to me. It's like, well, put them in your hands. See how they feel.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah.
Troll of the week. All right, let's take a quick break, and we will get to the next topic of the week. All right, and we are back with the next topic of the week. So we're going to stay right with Blizzard, A-Dub, and we're going to talk about some updates coming to my game of the year last year, that being Diablo 4. These updates will be coming for Season 4. They had a campfire chat. I suggest y'all check it out, because even what I'm about to lay out here is going to be a lot of reading, isn't going to cover everything that they discussed. and everything to discuss wasn't even enough to the point that they're going to have another campfire chat to discuss all the updates and changes coming to season four. It's an overhaul. It's great, A-Dub. So we'll start right out the gate by giving the new launch date for season four. That will be May 14th, 2024. Let's see. I got this off from IGN. So loot and affix updates. So when season four launches, legendary and rare items will have a reduced number of affixes. But the caveat is that more can be added over time via the new tempering crafting system and bolstered by the masterworking system. So many systems. They called it a system RPG. And as they broke it down, yeah, you're just like, oh, this is exactly what they mean. The reduction of affixes are as follows. Legendary items will now have 3 affixes, and rare items will now have 2 affixes. In general, the ethos, this is their philosophy behind it, is quality over quantity when it comes to items, and supporting the idea of a journey with your gear to continually improve it and feel substantial improvements over time. As such, there will be a smaller pool of affixes with more relevant and potent affixes remaining. You will also only find sacred items in World Tier 3 and only ancestral items in World Tier 4. Additionally, legendary items dropped from monsters level 9 to 5 and above will always be 925 item power.
That's big.
Gems will be simplified and improved with a longer crafting tail and more. Let's see, tempering. We mentioned that earlier, so this is it. Tempering manuals are a new item that you can gain from defeating enemies, and these will contain various affixes that all revolve around a particular build type or general theme. One of these affixes can be the applied at random to any item via blacksmith. Can then be applied at random to an item via blacksmith, though it's important to note that these can be rerolled up to the item's tempering durability if you don't like the outcome. Let's see, masterworking. I also mentioned that earlier. The above all feed into the masterworking system, which is a late game crafting system that allows you to further upgrade your items. It can improve your current affixes by up to 12 ranks, with a single affix being massively upgraded every 4 ranks you raise. And when you hit that 12 rank, It gets on and pop it, A-Dub. Let's see. Greater affixes. Greater affixes are more powerful versions of normal affixes with a 1.5 multiplier on the affixes max roll. These will only appear on ancestral, legendary, and unique items. I'm going to skip over class changes. Let's get right to...
That's way too nitty of the grit.
Yeah. We got in-game updates and additions. A new boss named Andario arrives and will have the same loot pool as Duriel. Summoning parts of Andario come from Beast and Ice and Lord Xur. Let's see. Helltides will appear in all world tiers now. Higher density. A new threat meter builds up while killing monsters spawning Hellborn. In that, towards the end, you'll see... This is why I turned off this shit. Let's see. Where was I? Yeah. Towards the end of the Helltide, the Blood Maiden is a new summonable public event boss. General monster spawning and ambushes have been increased in frequency. That's all they have right here. They left out the pit, which is a reprisal of the rifts, the greater rifts that we used to run through in Diablo 3, and that looked absolutely awesome too. It's you want to run through it as quick as possible. That was what I loved about it. So it was all about just smash and grab until you get to that end, and then you get all the rewards. And I think when they beat it, it was just all legendaries that dropped out from the fight. So I guess you can speak on whatever you want here. One of the big points that they mentioned is the idea that your loot grows with you. Obviously there's the changes to the fixes, so I'll let you start wherever you want to go, because it was just massive what they had to offer.
Well, I mean, the big thing that's going to change the game the most is the itemization, hands down. And this is for all the people who respond to headlines rather than reading the substance of an article or actually watching the videos where this information is derived. This is just to give you a picture of how things are going, because at first glance, it looks like, oh, they're nerfing items and, because they're reducing the number of affixes. But what's going on is that they're making items that drop. One, they're making them more applicable to your given class when they drop. So you're Like, as a barbarian, you're no longer going to get items dropping that have intelligence on them, since that's not a stat that the barbarian uses. Like, when items drop, the stat that they're going to have is either all or it's going to have strength. And then on top of that, they're also cutting down the affixes that boost ranks of skills. So you're not going to see items dropping with two or three different skill rank boosts on them. They're just going to have one, which makes them more applicable to a given build. You won't have wasted affixes that make a item, you know, less viable for you when you want to go enchant them and try to make them into something useful. But you start with the base where you have the rares that have two affixes, you have the legendaries that have three. From there, the tempering system allows you to add two more affixes to them from the tempering manuals. And even that is in itself a system, because the manuals have multiple affixes. You can pick the manual you want to add an affix from, roll it, see which one you get, re-roll it, try to get the one you want. And you can add that. The adding new affixes, that's for free, but re-rolling them, that's when you start digging into the tempering durability of the item itself. So you've taken an item that has two or three, you've added two more, which means that in the end, you're actually ending up with items that have five affixes on them. And in the case of legendaries, you also have the legendary aspect that's on it. So you have a more robust item. And then we start getting into the actual upgrading and the power of those affixes. So since they take stuff away, what they've done is they've punched up the values of the affixes that do drop on the item. So you may, like, something that may have had like 40 intelligence on it is now getting like 70 or 80. Like, something that may have had, you know, 2% critical strike is getting a higher value than that, so that they're more meaningful when they drop. You know that it's like, oh, this is something that I can turn into something greater. Speaking of greater, once you get to world tier 4, that's when items start dropping with what they call greater affixes. So what happens here is that these greater affixes, and there can be multiple on an item, I believe two, where they're dropping not just with the max roll for their stat range on that affix, but they're also dropping at 1.5 times that max roll. They always drop on max, and they only appear in world tier 4. Can't enchant the greater affixes, and you can't enchant an item to get a greater affix, but if you enchant a greater affix, you can pull it off of that item. So buyer beware. With the tempering system, like, they have the different categories and all that, so I feel like that alone is going to add a lot. The greater affixes just give you more power that you're going to be able to look for. It also incentivizes people to go to world tier 4 in order to get those affixes. And then another little change they made that I think is going to make a big difference is now flat damage is something they addressed, where certain affixes have ability, or certain aspects have abilities on them that just have a flat damage amount. Like, say a barbarian will throw a dust devil after spending 100 fury and it does 2000 damage. However, you know, you might get that on level 75, and then by the time you reach level 90, it's still doing 2000 points of damage. What they've done now is they've made those flat damage aspects scale with your weapon's power. So, you know, no matter where you have those flat damage affixes, as your weaponry becomes more powerful, those flat damage values also increase along with it. So you're getting these items, you're finding all these new affixes, you're putting the things on them that you want instead of sifting through stuff that you don't want in order to try to find like that one perfect thing. Like, items have a journey, as they said. And then on top of that, you have those values that are scaling with you. In addition to all these changes, another thing they're doing is that they're lowering the item drop rate. So that's going to reduce the amount of stuff that you have to deal with at any given moment. It's going to reduce the amount of time you're spending in your inventory, and stuff that drops because of these changes is going to be more meaningful to you at all times. So it's not like you're not just making runs back to town to drop off junk. You're making fewer runs back to town. You're spending less time in your inventories. There's less stuff that's going to be filling up your inventory. And you're going to spend more time thinking about what you can do with something rather than when you're going to get something you can do anything with. Further into that, they changed up the aspect system just a little bit, but in a very meaningful way, whereby now you no longer extract the affixes at the occultist. Instead, when you salvage an item at the blacksmith, that aspect goes to your codex of power. And what happens there is that every time you get a more powerful version of that aspect, that then becomes your codex of power version of that aspect. And as you go through the game, playing more, getting all the drops, eventually you will get that max roll drop of that aspect. And then that's just what you have to put on whatever piece of equipment you want. They let us know that max roll aspects will only drop in world tier 4. So that's going to be another reason for people to go to the max level. And then they got the master working system, which just takes all of that, which is already a significant boost to the itemization and the amount of power you're going to be able to extract from a given class or a given build. And they're going the extra mile. So this is a late game crafting system, like you said, and it's got those 12 ranks. And yeah, what happens is you go in the pit, you get your crafting materials, you come out, and then you have those incremental boosts for most of the levels where it's boosting all the stats a bit. But then, like you said, at 4, 8, and 12, it'll randomly select a single affix and give it a big boost. And they said this is randomized. However, you could find yourself in a situation where you get all three of those rolls on the same affix and you just get a weapon that nobody else has, or you get a piece of equipment nobody else has and just has insane power. And like, just all this taken together, it completely changes the gameplay loop on paper, because I haven't played it. However, if you're on PC, you can go get on that season 4 PTR, that public test realm, and you could try out all the changes for yourself. You'll have to start a new character to do it. However, they allow you to boost the character to level 100, where they're going to give you like 100 million gold. You're going to get your mount. You're going to get skill points and, you know, everything you would expect at level 100. That's going to allow you to fool around with the stuff and really see if this patch is for you. And that's just the itemization in general. Like, they're going to be also adding new baseline rare affixes. Some examples they provided are things like Fury per second or Life per hit. And then they're also going to enable more affixes on certain items like weapons, where, you know, certain affixes just wouldn't spawn on a weapon. Now they're actually going to get that stuff, like, you know, resource reduction, or, you know, watch the campfire chat if you want the details. Overall, they're making a smaller pool of affixes. They've gotten rid of the more specific stuff where it's like you can do more shadow damage to enemies affected by shadow damage over time, and, you know, do this while you're berserking and all this and that. So there's it's so much, and it's kind of hard to wrap your head around. I took notes. And as I'm going through the notes, it's still like the possibility is so much more robust than it was before. And then that's the biggest one for me. The Helltide updates are a close second. Some details there are that Helltides are going to have more monster ambushes and they're going to have better dynamic monster spawns. But the big note was that threat meter that they're adding. So as you're in the Helltide and you're just doing anything, you know, taking down enemies, opening up torture chests, you're going to be filling up that meter. And eventually, once it gets full, then Hellborn enemies are going to spawn. And they're extremely tough enemies. Like, the forces of hell take notice and they start sending more ambushes, more monster spawns at you. And then eventually the Hellborn come. And that's when you have the big battle in there. So Helltide is getting more interesting. It's becoming more accessible. Going back to itemization, because you mentioned that Helltides are going to be available on all world tiers, but there's also more stuff that they're doing with the world tiers. First and foremost, unique items will now start dropping in world tier 1 and 2. All unique items will be available to drop in world tier 3 and higher. And then they also mentioned that the uber uniques will now begin dropping from level 55 monsters instead of level 85 monsters, and they will all drop at 925 item power. So it's a mouthful. It's a lot to wrap your head around. Like, AMC, how does this make you feel about your future hours that you're going to bury into this game?
Yeah. I mean, I would want to get back into like their philosophy, because once again, it's like there's so much that you can just dive into their philosophy behind it and see how it's going to improve, you know, a lot of the experience, especially for the end game, because that was like the early complaints were for the people who, you know, the hardcore, the people who only focus on Diablo. They got to the end game and then they felt like, oh, there's not that much to do. And so they've continually added more bosses. But I like this idea that they've basically said they're reducing the drop rate, but the items that you get are going to be more meaningful and more impactful. Mm-hmm. And so that idea that one, you get to that point where you're towards the end game, you like your items that you have, so you get that tempering going. So now you're just improving, making your items stronger that you have on you until you find something possibly better. And then two, that idea that they're going to reward you playing the harder difficulties. And so when you get to the higher, like the higher world tiers, and you start farming those world bosses, if you get to that strength level and you get to that point where you can farm the world bosses, you'll be getting those drops. You go to the Helltides, you'll be getting the drops when you get to the end of that, you know, that meter and you take out the Blood Maiden. If you do the pit and you get to the bottom, you'll be getting a ton of drops. So they're basically, as long as you're doing all those big things that are, you know, located all throughout the map, you'll be getting legendaries. And so it's as they said, like, you're not going to just be getting a ton of drops. Like, if you go through a dungeon, like normal enemies aren't just going to be dropping a ton of legendaries, but you play through the dungeon, you're guaranteed to get some legendaries by the time when you take up that final boss of the dungeon, and those legendaries are guaranteed to be impactful. And so I like that. And even then, if you decide to, you know, like salvage it, you'll just be making something stronger on you. And so I love that idea that everything is feeding into each other and there is a reward, and you're going to have to work for it, but you know that reward is going to be at the end of it. So there's kind of more of a guarantee, but then it's still not a handout. So it's not like well, let me just run through, kill all these weak minions and see what legendaries I can get. It's like, now you're going to have to go put in that work, but you're going to get rewards for it. So I like the way that they're setting up the way to engage the game for people who have been playing it. Yeah. And just that idea that they're really, one, putting a focus in on the different classes, that really had me excited, because they were just going through all the changes that we didn't go into the character changes, but they said they're going to be like changing up some of the stuff with like the Book of the Dead with the Necromancer. Mm-hmm. Minions are now going to carry the full strength of your character. So as you get stronger, your minions get stronger.
Yeah, they are 100% of your stats.
Yeah, exactly. So like that, I can't wait to see how that works, because I'm all about my minions. And he said it's not even for Necromancer, the wolves for the druid. All minions. So I love that they've like looked at, and that's where it's important. Like, that's where you got to give them time, because they look at the data, they look how people are engaging with the game, and then they have their idea of where they want the game to go, and they kind of bridge those two worlds. And that's why there's a lot of conflict in the beginning, and that's why I get annoyed with like the, you know, the hyperbolism, that is a word, when it comes to, you know, the discourse around especially Diablo, because it's, the game is great, now the game is bad. Nobody's playing it. Mm-hmm. People really fell off of it. Oh, it's coming back around. Oh, they made some changes too.
Oh, it's good. It's good now.
Yeah, it's good now. And we see the cycle every time, especially with Blizzard games, because they have their idea and then they do look, as much as like people make it seem like they just ignore the gamer and they just do whatever they want to do to monetize the game and make it harder to earn stuff in the game. No, they're actually looking at the player data, the player feedback, and they're adjusting to that in a way that is beneficial for everybody. And so this is definitely shown with this. And we're around the 1 year point. It's going to be in May when it comes. So that's great, because it's also just in time for whenever that expansion hits us. So
with the new class,
exactly. So I like it makes me want to play the game right now, and it kind of doesn't make me want to play the game right now because of all those changes that are going to be available. It's like you also almost want to wait for them because you're so excited. But then at the same time, like for me personally, like I want to get my necromancer maxed out so that when all that shit comes out, me and you can just be out here running it with like maxed out characters, at least level 100 characters. And so there's an incentive to get my character up to snuff by the time these rollouts, then we could just be running these pits and really taking advantage of the the world tiers. Yeah, exactly. All those bonuses that come with like playing in world tier, because it clearly like they're pushing people get to world tier 4 and you're going to get some shit. So like, I can't wait. And the cool thing is you'll be rewarded along the way now that they're allowing people to experience more things in the lower tiers. So it's a great way to onboard people who are getting into the game now while also benefiting those who have been playing the game. And yeah, I can't wait, because it's, as they said, they haven't gone through all the changes. I love like that little thing that they showed with the sorcerers, or where it was like just
the frozen orbs.
Yeah, the frozen orbs conjuring minions who then like on top of that feed into conjuring more minions. Like it was just insanity by the end of the battle. So I can't wait to see them play around with more of that, because I imagine some of the different choices that you do, you could just have a completely different build to your character while also running like the same minion build or whatever. So it's great. And I love it. I love what they're doing right now with the game. And it just shows that they now have a feel for what the game really needs to be. And they're implementing all those things. And it's crazy that they're already getting to it at this point, because, I feel like we barely had
the game. Diablo 3 a lot longer to get here.
Yeah, I feel like we barely had the game and they're kind of already in the overhaul phase. So yeah, it's great. And yeah, as I said, it'll be right in time, because I'll have that for a little bit and then they can roll out that expansion later this year and just build that momentum. And so yeah, I absolutely love it. Do you have anything else to say?
Oh, dude, there are so many details in this. Like, you mentioned people who have been playing the game for a while, and they thought about those folks, they thought about us. They thought about us too, where these changes aren't retroactive, meaning that all the gear and equipment that you have right now, it's going to be legacy. So those stats aren't changing when season 4 rolls out. And season 4, these changes are going to be occurring in Eternal as well as seasonal. This isn't a seasonal only thing. Like this is a global update. And yeah, so if you have your max out characters in your Eternal realm, you have them right where you want them to be with their builds, those are still there. And you can go farm yourself some new equipment, masterwork, do all that stuff. But then you can also just start a new character and get at it from scratch. And, building on what you were saying about how they were showing off the frozen orb and how they reworked those affixes, like that extends to other items and parts of the game as well. Part of their quality over quantity approach is that they've made some aspects less restrictive. There are certain aspects that were class specific that are now just general. And then, other affixes, their functionality has been changed to be more synergistic with other abilities. Like with the frozen orb you talked about, they said the frozen orb, it goes out, it has a chance to spawn a random conjuration spell. So the whole conjuration class, like you like you're throwing the frozen orb, you aren't just conjuring ice oriented conjuration spells. Like the ice blades are coming out, the flame hydras are coming out, and then in addition to that, they all have a chance to spawn more frozen orbs. And it's changes like that for me, I felt the game lacked at the outset, which bring it more in line with how Diablo 3 is today, because I always felt the game could have benefited from having more of those synergies and what I describe as feedback loops, where you have a triggering skill that causes something to happen. And then as that thing is happening, something else can happen. And that opens up the amount of builds that you can create, where you can go strictly down, you know, a path of skills that all work well together. But then when you have these kind of synergies, you can more easily mix and match skills to get functionality and output that isn't necessarily apparent just by reading the individual affixes or the individual stats. In addition to what they're bringing in the game this season, they're going to be bringing 2 new unique items per class, which is double the normal amount that they add. And in addition to that, they're adding a new uber unique called Tyrael's Might, which is going to be a defense oriented item. I forget exactly what it does, but it's nice to see that classic item coming back, that Tyrael's Might, which was a legendary that I always went after in Diablo 3, because it had a very useful effect. I think it like increased your damage reduction or something. I forget it. Now, I'm probably quoting it wrong. Feel free to correct us and send us a note at controlissuespod@gmail.com. We'll read it out and we'll have a little discussion about it. But with Diablo, I mean, geez, like they're doing all that. And they even mentioned that you can masterwork unique items. So they can't go through the tempering process. So you can't add affixes to them. Unique items will continue to be unique. However, you now have the ability to put them through that system where they can get those incremental stat boosts as well as those big bangs for your buck at the 4, 8, and 12. The Masterwork system is going to replace the existing upgrade system. You guys know you go to the blacksmith or the jeweler and you can upgrade your equipment 5 levels, you know, get your incremental stat boost that way. That's gone. It's now replaced with the Masterwork system, which goes from 5 ranks to 12 ranks. And another note is that you're also able to reset masterworking. So if you upgrade something and it's not quite the way you want it, you can reset all that and start all over again. And just another one final note on uniques. They also said that these are able to drop with greater affixes. So even as you're hunting for uniques, when you get to that late game, that world tier 4, there's still a hunt there for the uniques that drop with greater affix values that make them even more powerful than they already are. I mean, this update is substantial, and they let us know that this campfire chat wasn't enough for them to detail all of the changes that are going into the game for season 4. There's going to be another campfire chat. And like, we didn't talk much about the class changes, which is a whole another thing. Like, you know, abilities and such are being reworked or being buffed. And, you know, it's, if you take the time to look at the information and see what Blizzard is actually saying and what they're actually driving at, instead of just reacting, you'll see that they're very much on the right path. And this is by far the strongest step that they've ever taken toward making Diablo 4 into as great as it can possibly be.
Yeah, it's out of control, man.
It's out of control. It's ridiculous. Like, yeah. My mind is racing, and it's, I mean, for like you described, it's, you know, it makes you want to play more, but it also makes you don't want to play. That 1 month delay is hitting me right in the gut, because I was already planning it out in my mind, like, okay, first week of April is about to go down. And they were like, nah, we got to delay it. And I totally understand, because this amount of changes, which they've been working on for multiple seasons now, it's, they need to test it. They need to give feedback. And they need to make sure that when it hits right. So, you know, take your time, Blizzard. I'll be there and keep working on my barbarian until I hit that max level. And then we go into the waiting period.
Oh, man. Yeah. You want to hit one more story before we get out of here? We're at the 5 o'clock mark. We can do a quick one. If you want to take a quick break, come back and want one last story.
Or a little quick hits. Yeah. I mean, how we got a few minutes before? Yeah, we got plenty of time. Got some Larian news in the quick hit section. They've made it known that they will not be doing any DLC for Baldur's Gate 3. They also will not be working on Baldur's Gate 4 or any other kinds of expansions. So Baldur's Gate 3, as it is, and in the future when it gets patches from Larian, that's the game. So, you know, this might come as a delight to some people, like, oh, well, they're not nickel and diming us with content they cut from the game, a game that is overflowing with content in a way that no other game ever has. I saw another article saying that Baldur's Gate 3 has the cutscenes run longer than Game of Thrones, which is insane. Following up on this news
in Baldur's Gate 3?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear. Is Kojima redeemed for Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 4?
Not in my heart.
I hear people getting mad about Baldur's Gate 3 having long cutscenes.
Well, because Baldur's Gate 3 has an overwhelming amount of gameplay, content, and possibility, and nuance.
Interesting.
we'll talk about that one in private. but following the news that Larian won't be working on Baldur's Gate 4 or anything else involved with Baldur's Gate 3, Hasbro has come out. They said that Larian was an incredible partner and that they're going to be doing more with the D&D universe. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that, because like working with Larian, that was just a pure gold move. And I don't know if can lightning strike twice with a different developer, like, or is this just showing you how great Larian is? But you know, I support Hasbro and whatever they're going to be doing to try to bring more D&D content to the gaming sphere. I just hope it hits as well as what Larian was able to achieve with Baldur's Gate. AMC, do you think you'll ever get into this game?
Yeah, when I retire and I have 500 years to play a video game. It just seems like a long-ass game, but it's a game that I want to play. I mean, did you beat it?
It has three acts. I'm close to the end of act one, and I've already spent close to 100 hours.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it's one of the, like, I've never encountered this with a game, and some people try to attribute it to some kind of negativity, but, and I'll go into a little detail on that shortly, but what happened with Baldur's Gate 3 is that there is so much going on at any one point, so many plots, so many storylines, so many options, so many places to go, so many secrets and tricks and things that you can do to try to get around certain situations, that I was just completely like, I just short-circuited it. It was just like, I gotta stop playing this. It's so much to keep track of that I don't think that I can physically and mentally keep up at this point in time. I need a break. You know, some people look at that as, oh, you got burned out on it. It's like, no, I didn't get burned out. It's just so much of such a good thing that I needed to take a breather. Like, you know, you could have the best steak in the world, but if they just keep bringing those steaks out, eventually you're going to be full. And you need to digest what you already had, and you need to come back later and get more steak. Like, you can't just keep devouring that stuff. I mean, I applaud the people who have been able to see the game all the way through in just one continuous motion. I especially applaud the people who have gone back multiple times to play through the game and try different things. Like, I have countless ideas of what I want to do next and all the different ways that I want to engage with it, knowing that there's so many possibilities, but I just cannot physically or mentally bring myself to go back to it yet before I put down a few smaller games just to refresh myself and put me in a position where I can actually handle Baldur's Gate 3 again. So congrats to Larian on what they were able to achieve, and big congrats to them for deciding to stop development on the DLC for the game, because their hearts weren't really in it when they were making it. You know, that's a tough decision for any developer to make, and you know, sometimes you got to do what's best for the product, and especially what's best for the studio and its personnel.
That's great. Do you have anything else before we get out of here, Ada?
A quick hit. Looks like the first 6 episodes of the Arc animated series are available on Paramount Plus. So that's something your boy is going to be checking out at some point. I was always interested in Arc. It looked very interesting to me, but I never got into the game itself. However, I'll definitely check out the animated series, and who knows, it might have the same effect as Cyberpunk Edgerunners, where it stimulates interest in the franchise. Just to note, the series cast includes Michelle Yeoh, Russell Crowe, Gerard Butler, David Tennant, Vin Diesel, and so it seems like they're doing their best to represent this in the brightest light that they can. So color me interested. AMC, you think you'll try out the Arc animated series? See if it appeals to you.
I don't know what Arc is. I gotta look up what Arc is. Arc's based on a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never played Arc.
Me neither. It looks pretty cool. I feel like it has dinosaurs and stuff. Yeah, it definitely has a lot of dinosaurs. It's got dinosaurs and stuff, so maybe it's like maybe it's people, the poor man's Turok or something like that. Yeah, okay. Well, not the poor man's, but just like a Turok surrogate. Who knows? But I'll definitely look more into the game now that it has an animated series. I love the Dragon Age series. I love the Dota series. I loved Arcane, award-winning top grade series. And yeah, more video game shows, please.
Yeah, especially in anime form.
Hell yeah.
I love it. Castlevania was my shit.
I gotta go back because I need to understand what's going on in Castlevania.
So good. Anything else?
Nah, that's it for me. This is a pretty meaty episode.
Yeah, so much Blizzard. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's always good being able to talk about Blizzard in their games. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, I suppose. All right. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is Ada. You are Control Issues. Thanks for joining. Suckers.